Professional wrestling, like real life, is full of surprises. Hi, everyone. It's Freddie Prinze Jr. And it's no surprise I can talk wrestling all day, any day. Kind of like how State Farm agents can talk insurance and help you choose the right coverage. When it comes to important insurance decisions, let State Farm support you with the coverage you need backed with 24/7 support. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season, millions tuned into the Betrayal podcast to hear a shocking story of deception. I'm Andrea Gunning, and now we're sharing an all-new story of betrayal. Justin Rutherford. Doctor, father, family man. It was the perfect cover to hide behind.
Detective Weaver said, "I'm sure you know why we're here." I was like, "What in the world is going on?"
Listen to Betrayal starting on May 23rd on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie.
Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The mafia didn't oppose the movie. That's the whole thing. I mean, they glorified it and wallowed in the attention. The problem with American Me was that they showed a martyr of the organization, Cheyenne Cadena, being sodomized. That was the problem with the movie. That didn't happen to Cheyenne. They took artistic liberty, and that's why everybody took offense at that.
Welcome to More Than a Movie, American Me. A podcast that digs into the history and mystery of American Me. A film directed by and starring Edward James Olmos that had a huge impact on Latino cinema and culture. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and I'll be diving into the behind-the-scenes controversy. Every episode, I'm going to try to peel back a layer of the story by trying to go deeper into the intentions and motives behind the film and the backlash. This week, we have something a little different for you. We've spent a lot of time talking to people, Hollywood types, who made this movie based on a real prison gang called the Mexican Mafia. But this week we'll talk to somebody who knows the real M.A. inside and out. That's because he was a former member. And he has firsthand knowledge of the events surrounding American Me, including the alleged extortion of Edward James Olmos and the murders of at least three people connected to the film. The former Mexican Mafia member asked me not to use his name. To protect his identity, we've had an actor re-record his responses. He's a former shot caller and spent more than 2 decades in prison. For the purposes of this interview, we'll just call him OG. OG was there for all of it. He called the movie's production from prison as an inmate representing the gang. He knew the people who were killed, and he says he knows why those murders were ordered. We're removing some of the details from the conversation that could identify him, but we're not altering his quotes in any way. Let's get into it, and let's start at the beginning of the violence that plagued this movie's release. The thing everyone skirts around, why did the Mexican Mafia take such an exception to the sexual violence in this movie?
Are you trying to be politically correct with the Mafia? Get real, dude.
No, I'm not at all. I'm not at all, please. What I'm trying to understand is what part is the worst part?
Like, is it that you got dominated by another person, or is it that you got dominated by another man?
Nah, you know, I think that's not even it, right? Because there's multiple members that have been sexually abused in their lives, right? They've all had all kinds of, you know, adverse childhood experiences, and sexual abuse is part of that. I don't think that's it, right? I think it's the terms of public displays or the public display of emasculation of the organization. Not only that, they showed other parts. The Black Gorilla family had taken other people on the streets and killed them, and that just never happened, you know? It was just some certain parts in the movie that were not real, and they took offense to those parts.
What did you think of the movie?
I mean, I liked it, but the Mexican mafia I was from wasn't like that. Like wearing their khakis up to their chest and orale vato. I mean, they're killers. You know, I mean, through and through killers. They kill people and it's organized crime. I mean, it was a prison gang when I joined, and it just became an organized crime group as it went through its metamorphosis, right? With horizontal integration, vertical leadership, all these things, right? Profit sharing and franchising. I mean, here's a group of guys that are dropouts from high school. You know, some of them are illiterate, and they're utilizing Fortune 500 practices, right? Without even realizing it, right? I mean, and it took just a few guys to make it happen. So, I mean, I thought the movie was okay. I just thought it was a little, you know, outdated, you know? It didn't apply to the contemporary mafia that I was from. I mean, we all started from there, and we all hail from gang areas. But, I mean, once you graduate to that, it's just, you know, it's different. I mean, some of those guys are stuck in their time warps. There's some guys up there that still speak that Orale Vato, Simon, but the majority of mobsters I know, they're not like that.
Let's be clear about something. Edward James Olmos made a movie about the Mexican mafia from the 1960s and 70s. He was not depicting the gang as it was in 1992, the year the movie was released. I know from off-the-record conversations with some of the filmmakers that the original script had been kicking around for over a decade. As bad as the MA in the movie seemed, the Mexican mafia that almost pissed off in 1992, the one that OG was a part of, was a different animal altogether. And almost found that out the hard way. One of the reasons we know this is the memoir by Danny Trejo, which we've mentioned before on the podcast. Trejo dedicates a whole chapter in his book, and a media tour to promote it, where he makes several big allegations about the Mexican mafia's reaction to the movie. But how much of that is actually true? That's something we've wondered since the beginning, and we finally had a chance to ask somebody who was actually there. So, did a Mexican mafia leader named Joe Pegleg Morgan really direct the extortion of Edward James Olmos? Did the gang manage to obtain the script in prison, like Trejo says? So, someone who started talking about this pretty recently in the last couple of years was Danny Trejo. He made some really specific allegations in his book and on some other podcasts, not on this one because for whatever reason he won't talk to us. But especially that Olmos should have known that people were upset with his idea of doing this. It sounds like you don't put a whole hell of a lot of credibility into what Danny Trejo is saying.
Yeah, I mean, look, was he an associate at one time? Sure, he was an associate. He was an associate in the organization. And does he keep in touch with some homeboys? Sure, you know, maybe he even keeps in touch with the Aaron older brother or carnale, you know, undercover through whatever means they communicate. But those guys are longtime has-beens, you know? They're has-beens or, you know, they're Christians or they're not righteous, active mobsters anymore. So for him to be in the know on this, it's like, nah, you know, Joe Morgan did not call him.
Uh-huh. Another point that was made to me is if he really had a problem with this movie, that they could have made life really difficult for these guys, right? Like filming inside of Folsom. But it doesn't seem like they did. Like, if they didn't really want this made, they could have just told the people, look, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. We'll see. The mafia didn't oppose the movie. That's the whole thing. I mean, they glorified it and wallowed in the attention. The problem with American Me was that they showed a martyr of the organization, Cheyenne Cadena, being sodomized. See, that was the problem with the movie. That was the problem with the movie. Because that didn't happen to Cheyenne. They took artistic liberty, and that's what everybody took offense at.
And that's the whole problem, right? Like everything else, it's blood in, blood out, except it also has rape.
Yeah, but that's a reality of prison, right? That didn't happen to Cheyenne. That didn't happen too often, but they took artistic liberty. That's what everybody took offense to. We had the actual scripts that we sent around, so everybody got a sense of what it was, you know? Somebody in the production company, in the production aspect of it, released a script to somebody, and so we got it.
How did you get it?
Well, I wrote a production guy, and then somebody else just sent me a script. I forgot who it was, but it was a connected guy, though. He had the script, and he sent it to me.
Last week, we spoke to Danny Haro, Olmos's assistant at the time, who said he did field calls from La M, so communication between the gang and production was happening from early on. Danny insists this wasn't him who sent the scripts, though. But what is clear is that the Mexican Mafia was aware of the movie from the very start of production. So I asked OG if they would have been upset if Olmos had actually obtained their permission.
Yeah, you know, I don't think they would have been upset at all. I think they glorified and they wallowed in the attention. American Me actually put the Mexican Mafia on the national, international stage. And the one thing about the Mexican Mafia is it loves to glorify its own sense of self-importance, right? I mean, you look at it, if you look at the members, they're narcissistic, egocentric, every form of personality disorder there is, you know? And that's why they achieved, you know, mobsters, right? You know, this movie, it gave them national validity as an organized crime group.
Was Joe Morgan aware that this production was happening? Trejo says he got a call at somebody's house from Joe telling him that this movie is no good.
No, Joe Morgan didn't have the ability to call Danny Trejo. You know, at the time the movie was being made, Joe Morgan was taken from Folsom State Prison. I was there. You know, he was taken. It was a place in Palm Hall, Deep Sag.
Yeah.
He didn't have access to telephones there. You know, he was in the SHU and they didn't have telephones except for, you know, death in the family. So to believe that, they didn't have, you know, cell phones back then. I mean, they had those big, you know, brick phones, but he was going to be afforded a phone call to be able to call Danny Trejo and say, hey, man, this movie's no good.
Other information we have tells us Morgan was being held at Pelican Bay, a new supermax prison meant to hold especially dangerous inmates or those associated with organized crime, both check marks for Morgan, and that he was in the SHU there as well. Whether Chino or Pelican Bay, OG is confident that Trejo Morgan phone call couldn't have happened. But what about an Olmos Morgan meeting?
I heard one story that Leo Duarte brought in Edward Olmos to see Joe Morgan at Cypress Sag. You know, that's in Chino State Prison where he was being housed in isolation. You know, he wanted to tell him about the movie, but Morgan ran him out, said, get the fuck out of here.
Was that before the movie was released or after?
That was before it was released. He wanted to ask, well, the rumor was he wanted to ask permission with this guy, Leo Duarte, who fancies himself a gang expert. But Joe Morgan ran him off.
But then OG said he had also heard the meeting never happened, that it was just a rumor. Leo Duarte was definitely a former prison official and served as a gang expert in court, so it's at least plausible the meeting happened. Either way, it seems clear to us by now that Joe Morgan never gave Olmos his blessing. Coming up, OG tells us about the Joe Pegleg Morgan that he knew and the details of the murders connected to the movie.
I often get asked why I'm such a big fan of wrestling, and it's all thanks to my grandma. Growing up, we would watch matches together, and that bond turned me into a lifelong fan. Hi, I'm Freddie Prinze Jr., and on my podcast, Wrestling with Freddie, we know how important it is to have the right teammate, because things can get pretty tricky quick. So, when things get complicated and you need help, State Farm gives you options. They show you what's possible for ensuring what matters to you. One of the things that matters to me? Sharing memories and revisiting wrestling's greatest moments. And with State Farm's support of the My Cultura Podcast Network, I get to do just that. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows, wherever you listen to podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. we're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlin, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season 1, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season 1, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with the Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to More Than a Movie, American Me. I'm Alex Fumero. I'm talking to a former member of the Mexican Mafia who was in prison and running a crew while the movie was in production. And note to listeners, when he says the SHU, that's an acronym for Safe Housing Unit, one of the places they put gang leaders.
The day after the Los Angeles Police Department declared war on the Mexican Mafia, this man put up the cash to bail out a suspected bank robber who was believed to be a member of the Mexican Mafia. This is Joe Morgan. Law enforcement officials say he's the honorary godfather of the Mexican Mafia. He denies that. Like some other members, Morgan is not a Chicano. He recently pleaded guilty to federal weapons violations and still faces narcotics charges. He has already spent much of his life behind bars.
In our episode on Joe Morgan, we heard from Milton Grimes, his former attorney, about Morgan's life and eventual death in prison from an illness. He's referred to as a leader or shot caller within the organization in countless articles and videos online. But the former Mexican Mafia member we talked to said Morgan was never that high up in the gang.
You know, Joe Morgan wasn't this godfather everybody says he is, you know? He was just a regular carnale, a regular member like everybody else. You know, he had respect in the organization. He was well-liked by some people. You know, I didn't like him at all because, I mean, you know, I'm not racist at all. But here's this white guy running the Mexican mafia, right? Or presumably in the public eye, you know, being the figurehead of the Mexican mafia.
Right. He had that, like, Tom Hagen kind of reputation.
Yeah. So, you know, he wasn't this monolithic figure in the organization. He was well-liked, you know, a historic figure in the organization, but he was still just a carnale. So he couldn't tell anybody what to do. He wasn't going to get paid because he was this, you know, godfather. It just didn't work like that.
I guess the reason why I thought he would get paid is because one of the characters in the film is based on him, right? Like JD. So I thought because of that and because he filed a defamation suit later, which didn't work out, that he would have gotten paid.
No, I mean, what you do in your own hustle is your own hustle. I mean, like, look, mafia members can hustle on anything they want to hustle on, right? And no one member can impose their will or exact monies from another member unless we're partners. You know, if we're partners in the shared territory, we share a business endeavor, then sure. But if I go and extort, you know, let's say Kevin Spacey, and he had done a movie based on somebody's life, somebody can't come to me and say, I need part of the money. Because, that'd be cause to get that guy killed for trying to extort me.
So according to our source, the gang was able to get the script in prison, or a version of the script. Among the sexual violence that angered the gang was the rape of the gang's leader, Rodolfo Cheyenne Cadena, in juvie in the 1950s. Danny Haro, almost his longtime collaborator, says that detail came from a deputy director of corrections for the whole state of California prison system, a guy named Tony Casas, who served as a technical advisor on American Me and died in 2006. Casas told Olmos that the real-life Cadena was raped in juvenile hall, so Olmos put it in the movie. What we don't know is whether the juvenile hall scene was in the script that the Mexican mafia saw. It wouldn't matter. 2 months after the movie's release, people started dying. Then someone demanded money from Edward James Olmos, allegedly. Some say there was a bounty on his head. Whether or not there was a green light, a hit on Edward James Olmos has been the $64,000 question for this podcast. Or was it $50,000? Or $100,000? Or $1,000,000? According to OG, here are the facts. Was there ever a bounty on Edward James Olmos, as far as you know?
No, there was not a bounty. The Mexican mafia never paid for a hit, and it doesn't pay for hits. You do a hit, it's for the honor and the glory and the privilege for killing for the organization. So, I mean, he was a target, but not really a viable target. I mean, would they have killed him if he walked into gang territory and there were shooters there? Sure, they would have killed him. But I think he was more valuable being the target of extortion. So, I mean, you have to look at it through the prism of the mob. Dead guys don't pay, all right? Dead guys don't pay money. And he was a valuable asset to the organization for the period that they used him.
Do you know what he paid them?
Yeah, $50,000.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's actually less than what we heard, but I guess $50,000 30 years ago is a different story. So it wasn't a bounty in the sense that they'll pay for anyone who kills him, but what would have happened if Olmos hadn't paid?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if he wouldn't have paid, he would have got whacked.
Danny Haro brought up this idea that Olmos couldn't have paid because had he paid, they would have just kept extorting him forever. Pay $50,000 and they'll ask you for another $50,000. But here's OG saying that that's not how the business works. You take the money because that way people will pay and trust that you'll go away. It's satisfaction guaranteed in a fucked up kind of way. Do you know who he paid it to or how that went down?
Yeah, Alex Aguirre got the bulk of it. Smilon Gallardo and I think Chuco Castro as well.
Alex Peewee Aguirre faced federal indictment in the 1990s and has an Avenues clique called the Peewee Gangsters named after him. David Smilon Gallardo was a member of the Hazard Gang, as in Lives in Hazard, in Ramona Gardens, and is currently serving a life sentence for multiple murders and other charges. Chuco Castro turned witness to the prosecution in the federal case against the Mexican mafia. We are unable to determine his whereabouts today. And then when the movie came out and people started getting killed, where did those orders come from? From prison?
No, this is all coming from guys on the street. You know, they're effectuating the hits. Like the hit on Ana Lizárraga, that came from Smilon Gallardo. Smilon Gallardo directed the hit on Charlie Brown Marquez and Rocky Luna. You know, and Alex Aguirre actually did the hit on Rocky Luna. And then Ana Lizárraga was Jose Gonzalez. He took the fall for that.
Jose Gonzalez got convicted, but do you think he was the actual shooter?
Nah, I heard he took the hit for his brother. I mean, they caught him running away. Then his brother got killed by another Mexican mafia member.
So why did the street react to this movie more than people in prisons?
Well, you know, a lot of it was filmed in Hazard. So Smilón Gallardo, he was headstrong, and it was opportunistic for him to eliminate people. They used to call Rocky Luna the godfather of the projects, right? So it was opportunistic for Gallardo to utilize, you know, what was happening in the political world of the mafia to get them whacked. You know, Charlie Brown Marquez, we had conspired to kill him. You know, I had volunteered to kill that guy years before. He wasn't even worth killing, though, right? He was living in an abandoned house. He was stealing car batteries to get his heroin fixed. I mean, when I offered to do it, they told me, nah, the guy's not even worth killing. At some point, we'll kill him, but just not right now. So Smilón Gallardo saw this opportunity in this movie because Ana Lizárraga was known as a rat through and through the hood, you know, because she went through youth gang services and she spoke to cops all the time. So she had smut on her. Charlie Brown Marquez had smut on him for being a bum. He was degrading the organization by living in cars and being a crackhead. And Manuel Luna became a crackhead. So, you know, they were diminishing the stature of the organization. So Smilón used this opportunity to gain a foothold in Hazard.
Right. And how many people do you think actually died because of this movie? Because, again, Danny Trejo says it was about 8 to 10 people.
No. I know 3 people that got killed for it. You know, there may have been a stabbing or two, but there was only 3 people that got killed behind it.
So according to OG, this wasn't some grand plan hatched in prison, directed at the highest levels of the Mexican mafia. It was a neighborhood beef, territorially focused in Hazard. And the victims seemed marked for death from before anyone in the area even knew the movie existed. So does this completely absolve Edward James Olmos? Coming up, we hear whether OG, a former member of the Mexican Mafia, holds Edward James Olmos responsible for the murders that followed the movie's release.
I often get asked why I'm such a big fan of wrestling. And it's all thanks to my grandma. Growing up, we would watch matches together, and that bond turned me into a lifelong fan. Hi, I'm Freddie Prinze Jr., and on my podcast, Wrestling with Freddie, we know how important it is to have the right teammate, because things can get pretty tricky quick. So, when things get complicated and you need help, State Farm gives you options. They show you what's possible for ensuring what matters to you. One of the things that matters to me? Sharing memories and revisiting wrestling's greatest moments. And with State Farm's support of the My Cultura Podcast Network, I get to do just that. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows, wherever you listen to podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlin, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season 1, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season 1, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpert.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with the Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. This is More Than a Movie. I'm Alex Fumero. Today we're talking to a former member of the Mexican Mafia, and he's about to tell us whether he believes the people related to the movie are still in any danger of repercussions from the gang. One of the things that we've run into, which I think you might find a little funny, I would say 50% of the people that I've gone to, especially the higher up they are on the totem pole for this film, they're convinced that if they talk to us, that it could either get them killed or get Edward James almost killed. What are your thoughts on that? And really this whole mystery around the production for the last 30 years?
You know, the mob doesn't go after those targets. They go after low-hanging fruit. You know, they're opportunistic killers, right? They don't go kill productive members of the community. You know, Edward James Olmos is scared to death, right? I get that. You know, he put in for a license for a concealed weapon. He left the country for a while and he really didn't have to. He scared himself. He's seen his own demons. You know, he created his own demons. You know, he was seeing ghosts in every corner. And he had a meeting with someone connected at a Marisco's place downtown or in East LA. And it scared the shit out of him. Them saying they're going to kill you, that there's a bounty on your head. The mafia has never, ever paid anybody to kill anybody. They just don't do that.
From your perspective, how much responsibility does Edward James Olmos bear for the things that happened to those people?
I think he bears no responsibility, man. You know, he's an artist doing what he thinks is right. He was just trying to send a message to the youth to persuade them. And I'm a complete supporter of that guy, man. I don't think he bears responsibility. Should he have exercised a bit more discretion? Certainly. But I mean, we could throw rocks all day long. In hindsight, you know, everybody has 20/20 vision, but at the time it seemed like a good idea. And it wasn't even that offensive to me, because that stuff happens all the time in prison. But you know, that's what the mafia used to extort Edward Olmos. I really don't think they were that upset. Like I said, you know, this movie was used as a vehicle to eliminate the people they wanted to eliminate already.
So then could you see a movie being made with none of the sexual assault stuff in it that tells the same story that doesn't offend the Mexican mafia versus what he ended up producing?
You know, I think it offended some people. It really, it'll finish some people, but I think those people are going to get killed no matter what. They were going to be killed no matter what. Because we discussed killing Charlie Brown years before. Ana Lizárraga, you know, was tossed up years before, and Rocky Luna had become a crackhead and he was dishonoring the organization. So they were all going to be killed no matter what. And Smilón Gallardo used that as a vehicle. You know, the offensive part, sure, you know, they pissed some people off. And it was a money-making opportunity to extort Edward James Olmos. So, you know, would it have got people killed? Yeah, you know, maybe. But I don't think he bears all the responsibility for these deaths. I think it's just the organization being cannibalistic like it is. Those guys were going to die no matter what. And as unfortunate and as jaded and as brutal as it sounds, this is the organization. This is how it functions. It kills its own.
On our next episode of More Than a Movie, American Me. In our last episode of the season, one clue into Edward James Olmos' psyche might lie in a story that we heard about. The 1992 civil rights uprising in Los Angeles, sometimes better known as the LA riots.
It was amazing. It was amazing. You know, I remember coming, we started, I think, Eddie, myself, and maybe three other people. And I specifically remember we came to an intersection where there were rioters going on, and there were the National Guard and the police, and they actually stopped for us because they were about to go at it. They stopped for us.
More Than a Movie, American Me is a production of Exile Content Studios in partnership with iHeart's Michael Duda Podcast Network and Trojan Horse Media. This show is produced by me, Alex Fumero, at Angry Yuka on the internets, and our senior producer is Nigel Duara. Rose Reed, Nando Vila, and Kareem Tapsch are our executive producers. Our supervising producer is Sabine Jansen. Mixing and sound design by Eduardo Albornoz. Our executive producers at iHeart are Giselle Bances and Arlene Santana. For more podcasts, listen to the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. 19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
A new season of Bridgerton is here, and with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix, then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season, millions tuned into the Betrayal podcast to hear a shocking story of deception. I'm Andrea Gunning, and now we're sharing an all-new story of betrayal. Justin Rutherford. Doctor, father, family man. It was the perfect cover to hide behind.
Detective Weaver said, "I'm sure you know why we're here." I was like, "What in the world is going on?"
Listen to Betrayal starting on May 23rd on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.